Lee, who likes Vaporeon, wants to know, how can a Pokemon like Crocolor make fire?
We know Crocolore has a flame sac that is in the Pokédex, but the mechanisms by which it produces flames in that flame sac, that's for a Pokemon researcher to get funded and to find out.
Yep, there you go.
The
Next
Pokemon
question.
NSF.
All right, so Kayla, who likes Jigglypuff, wants to know, what's Jigglypuff's natural habitat?
Most of Jigglypuff are found around cave entrances, and we know from some of the anime that they are found within caves. So I think it's interesting in the game that you see them around the entrance of the cave. So there's something going on there. I don't know what. Again, another NSF Pokemon project. That's just gonna be my default answer.
I love this. Yes.
So Raj, who likes Greninja, says, what Pokemon are based on Hinduism?
This is an excellent question because Hinduism has not necessarily like shown up in the way that some other things have in
Not
Pokemon
enough. I mean,
as far
not
as in
enough.
influences.
Oh, go
Yeah,
ahead. Interrupt.
there's
Go
a
ahead.
couple of things. Yeah.
No, I
Well,
was
I
just
have a whole
commenting not
document.
enough as a biased person myself of
There's
somewhat
a
of
whole
Hindu
document in
faith.
the shared drive, just so you're all aware, about mythos. It lists everything.
Oh, okay. Well, the ones that I found, we have the Medicham line, especially the Medicham Mega Evolution design is like it really clearly takes like a Hindu or Indian influence. We have Kewfint and Copperajah, not necessarily Hindu, but definitely of the continent of India, which I feel like Hinduism has a very large influence on Indian culture at large. So Copperajah is right there. I would go as far as saying Miltank, just because cows are sacred in Hindu ideology. Miltank doesn't really give me like Indian or Hindu vibes, but it is a cow. And then geographically, the crocodile line, so Sandile, Croc-Rock, Crocodile, the Gharial, which they're based off of, is native to the Indian continent. So that's kind
That's what the
of
document says. I just posted in the chat box. Andrew, I'm open to your interpretation and
excellent.
your comments, because this is not my specialty.
Yeah, I'm wondering because obviously the games aren't explicitly being like, "Hey, this Pokemon here reminds me of this specific religion in the real world." Though weirdly enough,
Except
they
for
do mention
Kyogre, Groudon, and Rayquaza.
true. Though they do, if you look at like OG Pokédex entries, they mention this Pokemon's real strong because they can defeat an Indian elephant a lot. Like it's
It's
enough.
like
It's it's it's
several
one of those.
times.
Yeah, it's one of those like what's the old Phineas and Ferb quote? It's like how many times has this occurred? What's it? If I had a nickel for every time, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it feels like that means something.
I
Because they mentioned it quite a couple of times, but yeah. So Madison, the list that you sent, a few of these that pop out to me in particular, Infernape being Hanuman, can easily see that co connection there. What else we got here? Hoopa. I can see the Shakti inspiration there as well. I think you could sort of see the Machamp Vishnu combination, mainly because in one of the avatars of Vishnu, they've got a lot of hands. A lot of times you'll see Vishnu with multiple hands and arms. And so just the fact that Machamp has multiple arms sort of like gets a nod to it, but none of them are like A to B connections. They're like A to this concept, to this idea, to this thing that you could probably wrap around. So not a lot based on Hinduism. A couple of Indian references though, which is just making me wonder, like, look, they've talked about India all this time. Either that means they will eventually do an Indian region, or they can't because they've specified that India exists. So they either lock themselves out or they have like hinted at it for 10 years, like 20 years, 28 years, all the years, actually.
All of them.
Next
All.
question. April, who likes Charizard, says, why is Charizard orange? I had no idea, and I didn't know if Jillian would have time, so I said it could be camouflage due to his fire typing. Maybe it lives in a volcano. I don't know. It could also just be that they felt dragons were red or orange, because it ties to a lot of like the European dragon designs, which kind of matches Charizard. And then I said it also just be that fire Pokemon, especially early ones, were like red or orange or had some sort of red, orange, or yellow in them.
Yeah.
In fact, that's kind of prevalent in most of the early generations.
I would say that's probably the best assumption to run with, is that it's this association between orange and fire, and having the player easily identify a Pokemon's type based on its color, or things about the Pokemon based on its color. But this reminded me of this really cool article where CRISPR was actually used to show the genes that are responsible for color change in reptiles, which I thought was re this is cool because we don't often know the specific genes that impact a specific trait. And so, for example, like hair color is, you know, the result of multiple genes at work, right? But here we have found like the exact gene that changes the color of reptiles, which I thought was super cool. That's like a super rare thing for a ge like geneticists to find a specific gene that's linked to a specific trait. Anyways, I'm done nerding
No,
out
you're
about
great.
genetics.
I'm gonna skip around here a little bit because I know Jillian, you have a time constraint, and I do want to make sure we get yours. So, Lord Britannia in our Discord, I don't know what their favorite is, but they asked, they said some animals, some actual live animals, what are some actual live animals that use other animals as weapons or defenses?
This is a great question.
Like dragon pole, right?
Yeah. For real animals, I actually just learned about pom-pom crabs really recently. So, where I go to school, we have a competition where we present the weirdest animal behavior. So one of my colleagues presented pom-pom crabs. And so for those of you who don't know what a pom-pom crab is, it's a crab that puts anemones on its claws. So it does put another organism on its claws and will use them for defense against predators, but also uses them in battles against their own species. But we've also found that when they battle each other, they don't actually end up touching each other with the pom-poms most of the time. And we don't really know why that is. There's a couple of different hypotheses, and the two main hypotheses are that if they do touch each other with the pom-poms, that it's like super toxic to the crabs, and so it's really detrimental for them to touch each other with it. But the alternative hypothesis is that it doesn't really have an effect on their opponent, so there's no point in potentially harming their anemone that they need by hitting their opponent with it.
I have a hypothesis.
What is your hypothesis,
All of
Madison?
the crabs are actually gentlemen.
They're under gentleman's code.
What's interesting about these crabs too is that they have these anemones on them basically at all times, and when they molt, when they shed their skin, they immediately put these anemones back on, even when their exoskeleton hasn't hardened yet, which I thought was really interesting. I don't really know why that
We do have a
is.
question about turning on cameras. I have it disabled right now just because we are using Zoom and it is being recorded, and I do not want to have to deal with waivers at the moment. If you have a question, you're welcome to type it the chat box, so we are happy to comment or answer. Just because I didn't want to have to publish anything without anyone's permission, and I just want to make sure that going forward, I know this is a discussion that we're going to have at our next meeting. We've talked about video and more community-based stuff. I know Andrew and I both like that kind of stuff, so we might talk about what that might look like going forward. So, I like community stuff. I miss doing it. I know last year I was overwhelmed like crazy and wanted to jump off of a bridge many days, but we're good now. Everything's better. It's getting better. Life's getting better. That's right, y'all. Get therapy and work on your trauma. All of you. Yes, you. No, you.
Or fight each other with the enemies.
Or that, yes.
So, the next question I have for Jillian is says, it's from Olivia, who likes Torkoal, and says, how risky would it be to let your Pokemon battle other Pokemon?
So this, I thought this was a fun question. And in terms of Pokemon, the healthcare system for Pokemon themselves is quite robust, as it seems like there is some, well, first of all, there's like some health adaptation for Pokemon for them to be able to endure all of this battling, even this interspecific battling with other kinds of Pokemon, and it appears to not impact their lifespan meaningfully. So I would say in the game, it's not risky at all. And it actually appears to be encouraged as a form of enrichment for Pokemon. They like to be a part of battles and to have this this activity in their life. But in real life, my personal and professional opinion is absolutely do not battle real animals for fun, please, because this often causes stress on animals and can leave them temporarily or permanently injured. And at the worst, it can cost them their life. So as we always talk about on the show, especially on EXP, it's important to show great care and respect for animals. So please don't battle your real animals. I know that's like, oh, go ahead.
No, you keep going. I'm going to check this. We're good. You'll be able to chat in the chat box too. If you have a question, you can send it there.
I know there is like battling of some like invertebrates sometimes in other places, and I will not speak too heavily on that, but just rule of thumb, don't battle live animals.
Well, now that you said that, I'm wondering if all Pokemon evolutionary are like chimpanzees. Now they need conflict.
Now they need it.
I mean, chimpanzees like are like the only other animals that have like war, right? Like, they need it.
We just like introduce the EXP share to chimpanzees. Would that like fix the potential for conflict?
So this is gonna be one of the last ones. I want to make sure that I ask while Chilean is here. And this is from Liz, who likes Mimikyu. So it says, "Why can some Pokemon talk and others not?" So
I had a few thoughts,
but then I want you to correct me on everything. So I was thinking, though, like I said, animals actually show a wide variety of abilities to understand human language. So some animals can learn to recognize words and phrases. Gorillas are animals that can actually learn sign language and can actually speak with people using sign. So I know that some dogs can communicate using those button things or those mats to convey how they're feeling or what they want. Oh my gosh,
I just actually just watched this video of like a dog trainer debunking half of those videos. It was crazy. Real? Yeah, it was. Anyways, we can talk
Never
after.
Mind.
No, I don't know.
It's
like
all the... fake.
No, I don't actually know. Like I was just listening to like both of them because the first time I saw it, I was like, that's freaky. I don't want my dog talking to me.
I can imagine because they say a golden retriever has the intellect of like a 3-year-old. So I can imagine they would be able to do like a handful of buttons, but like 60?
I think they can understand vocabulary, but in terms of actual communication, like the button pressing is dubious, but it is clear they can understand like different parts of human language.
So I did also say the animals like parrots can actually mimic and organize human speech to convey their thoughts, often more than just copying. So like some African gray parrots have learned enough human language to convey their wants or needs. So I would assume some Pokemon have the cognitive capabilities of speech. Maybe others don't.
Yeah, I guess in terms of like talk, I assume this is based on like human language. And so like Madison pointed out, some organisms like parrots have the actual physical ability to create human speech. But in terms of how we define talk and communication in animals, that can look really different. So I study animal communication, but specifically arachnid communication, and their mode of communication is mostly vibratory signals in spiders. So if we want to describe spiders talking to each other, we might say they talk to each other through vibrations. And so different Pokemon can be using these different forms of communication to talk with each other more or less. Yeah.
Oh, fascinating. I love this. We're going to jump to the next question, which is from Darnell, whose favorite is Raichu. And Darnell asks, what places have Pokemon games based upon them? I love this question. There is a giant Bulbapedia article about this. So really the first four generations were totally based in Japan. They tried to keep it in-house, keep it local. So Kanto is the Kanto region of Japan. Johto is the Kansai region. Hoenn is the Kyushu region. And Sinnoh is the Hokkaido region. These are all also kind of where the games say they are. So Sinnoh is like in the north, right? So Hokkaido is like the north of Japan. Kyushu is in the south. Hoenn is said to be like a more southern region. So it kind of maps basically what Japan looks like in real life. And then the Sevi Islands from Fire Red and Leaf Green, those are the Izu and Bonin Islands, which are off the south coast of Tokyo. By Gen 5, we all know this is like a reboot of the series in popular terms. So Unova is actually based on the United States. We know that Castalia City is really like supposed to be New York City. I do know that some of the other regions are not necessarily like the Upper East Coast of the United States. So there is the town, Lentimus Town, the one that they added in Black and White 2, is supposedly based in the southwestern United States, but more or less United States. And then we're moving international. You know, Gen 6, Kalos, we have France. Alola in Gen 7 is Hawaii. Gen 8, Galar, is the United Kingdom. The DLCs are part of that. So the Isle of Man is the Isle of Armor, potentially also related to Hong Kong, because we know that Britain and China have a particular relationship as geographical regions. And then the Crown Tundra is Scotland. And then Gen 9, we know Paldea is based on the Iberian Peninsula, which includes both Spain and Portugal and like the surrounding Oceania area of that part of the world. And the DLC Kitakami is an actual place in Japan called Kitakami. It's within the Iwate prefecture. So they're all really, it's really interesting, and I love how Pokemon is taking real world places and applying them into a digital context. We're really looking forward to seeing what Gen 10 might bring. What I mean, some people are speculating it might be Italy next. I would love, love, love to see an African game. I don't know. They could go all sorts of ways, but yeah, they're all real places. And to throw on here too, because this is not just mainline, the side games are also based on real places. So we know from Colosseum Ore is Arizona in the United States. And I think we know that specifically that it's Arizona. Fiore and Ranger is also based on the Japanese prefectures of Okayama and Hyogo, as well as the Shoto Island. Almia and Ranger Shadows of Almia is parts of the Hokkaido prefecture, specifically Oshima and Hiyama. And Oblivia and Ranger Guardians of Signs is the Oki Islands, which are located in Japan. And then in Pokken, which I think this is
all
the...
Japan, isn't it? Just all Japan.
Yes, yeah, but you see that the GameCube games were really taking Japan as their main place, and then these DS games as well. So yeah, really excited to see what's next from the Pokemon Company, because it's gonna be a real place.
Australia.
We just don't know what.
Australia.
Australia would be great. Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, there's always a hint to what the next region is coded into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So we had there were symbols of Scarlet and Violet in the last game. In the game before that, we had the map of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
In the game before that, we had the Hawaiian, like the Hawaiian decor.
Yes, and the little tiki thing. Yeah.
It is my understanding that I haven't found it because I don't know where to look, and I'm not that OCD about playing video games right now, having two kids and this podcast and my job. But there was a map somewhere that looked like the Great Barrier Reef. There's pictures of that. And there were some things that made it seem like Australia was next.
Cool.
Oh, there's a picture of Devil's...
Devil's Rock.
Devil's Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I believe
like
it.
Australia.
That sounds great.
Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Finally give us a good kangaroo mon, god dang it.
We had a question in chat
yes.
From someone who was here. Jonathan P. asked what our favorite Pokemon are. A shrug from Madison. Silence from Anaru and Ben.
Oh, I wasn't
okay.
Sure if you were,
this is
I
great.
Didn't know if you were going to go first or not.
Go first,
Well, my favorite Pokemon is Centiskorch. And I brag about this all the time that my favorite wedding gift I got was a PSA grade 10 Gigantamax Kabu's Centiskorch hollow card. Yeah, and it's in a nice little protective case, and oh, best wedding gift ever, because I'm a nerd. And we also had Pokemon music played by two violinists and
that's
a pianist.
Super cute.
I love this.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
literally. Yeah, all of our wedding music was like video game anime music.
Aww. The nerdiest wedding ever. So I have two, because I can't decide, and I'm terrible at deciding, which is why I'm super polyam. It is Espeon and Sylveon, and I love them equally because they are both equally my baby.
They are baby. My favorite Pokemon is Swampert. More or less for nostalgia reasons, was my very first starter ever, and I recently just took my Swampert from my original Ruby and put him into Violet, so I still have him.
That's so
yes
cute.
He
must have taken
still here.
Millennium to do.
You
going
would
from generation
the
to
hardware you have to go through, my broken DS, like, oh my gosh, but he's here, he's out in the world.
That's fun. Swampert, funnily enough, Ben, I feel like the more I get to know you, the more similar we end up being. Swampert is my second favorite Pokemon, and could be number one depending on the day, but usually number one is taken by this fella's evolution. The Wigglytuff is my favorite Pokemon. I talk about it about once every half an hour, give or take. I actually got this guy.
It's a Wigglytuff.
I actually got this guy at the convention that we most recently went to. That was my one purchase that I did. I would have gotten the Wigglytuff, but look, I like Wigglytuff, but Wigglytuff is not $10 expensive or to me, at least. I'd rather get the Jigglypuff, and then I'll find a Moonstone myself. Okay, that's my logic.
We're gonna find you a Wigglytuff when you come out and we do Colossal.
But yeah, so the Wigglytuff, I've talked about this, I think, in a few episodes of Pokonomics, and you probably hear me talk about it occasionally. But my favorite Pokemon game in general is Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Explorers of Sky.
Yes!
And
no way the Mystery
we've
Dungeon
never heard you say that a thousand times.
I've never talked about the Mystery Dungeon franchise, a thing that I have an entire other podcast that's existed for nearly 4 years, I think, about. Yeah, no, nothing. What? No. Yeah, so the Mystery Dungeon franchise is how I got into Pokemon. My first game was Blue Rescue Team, and not the main series games. So imagine my shock when, like, there was immunities, which are not a thing in the Mystery Dungeon franchise, and me going through being like, why isn't this ground-type move working on a flying-type Pokemon? I get that it's supposed to do, like, a little damage, but why is it doing no damage? Among other differences between the two. But yeah, so my pathway into the game was Mystery Dungeon. Blue Rescue Team has a Wigglytuff. They're great. They're friendly friends. It's a whole thing. And then the Explorers of Sky, Wigglytuff comes in as the Guildmaster and is basically a lovable bouncing ball of joy that if you get on their bad side, blasts you into the next millennium, which I feel like represents me a lot.
I was going to say, Anaru, that sounds like you.
This is very...
I do think all of us have listed our favorites. And if you've not joined our Discord yet, please join our Discord. I know all of the cast members have listed our favorites, Pokemon, Ice Cream, and all that great stuff. I still laugh that me and Lila are both bubblegum, because, like, that's a weird thing for my daughter and I to have in common. Because, like, anyone who spends more than 10 minutes with us is like, you two are total opposites. And I am well aware. My other child, who looks nothing like me, is my mini me. I am well aware. But Lila to be like bubblegum, because Lila hates sweets and candy, and just like, I'm not a big candy person either, so. But we both love bubblegum ice cream.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
All right, so Sarah, who likes Pikachu, and Julie, who also likes Pikachu, says, who was the first Pokemon? This is a great question, and it is the most awful Who Wants to Be a Millionaire question, because there are four answers. So we have Bulbasaur, who's the first Pokemon in the Pokedex. We have Arceus, who's the Pokemon creator god, so technically came before the universe, if you're in-game. We have Rhydon, the first Pokemon ever designed. And then we have Mew, who's the ancestor to all other Pokemon. I don't know who came first.
All of them. All four.
So is this like a who came first, the chicken or the egg or the rooster or the fourth thing in the category that would make this analogy work out properly?
The answer is always the egg in that situation, because the egg had to come from a previously existing animal.
Oh, I see. So it's a quote unquote mutated egg, I guess, that turns into chicken.
Yeah,
depends on your
egg.
Your species hypothesis.
So Orange, who likes Sylveon, said, how can a Pokemon turn into water? I have no idea.
Okay, listen, I tried to answer this question because Vaporeon specifically, Dex entry says that its body's cellular structure is similar to water molecular composition. Now, hold on a second. I don't know if that's even remotely possible for actual animals. I don't know any animals that would even do something like become transparent in water. This feels like another thing, like a flame sack. Like we need the Science Foundation to go study this thing as well.
Like an animal cell and how complex an animal cell is, and for them to say, oh, it's the cellular, the structure is similar to the structure of water, which is just
a molecule.
H2O. Yeah, a molecule. I'm like, what? Where is the? This is again just the Pokemon company not writing kidding. Words on a page.
Like yeah. The biochemistry is not working here. I don't know.
But I like that
it's Hydro Man from Spider-Man.
I like that it's just one of those entries where everyone's like, yeah, makes sense. Sounds good. Send sure. it off. There's been a lot of scientifically dubious conversations I've heard that go over about as well as this Pokédex entry, where everyone is just like, when it's in your periphery, you're like, yeah, that makes sense, whatever. And then when you think about it, you're like, wait a minute.
You're like, that's not real. Yeah.
You're like, I need to go talk to the person who brought this up at the dinner table.
Okay, next question is from Alexandra, who likes Espeon. How could Giovanni organize such a large crime organization without police stopping
it? Well.
Okay, listen, from my limited, like, okay, my coworker studies the police in her PhD program, not me. But from my limited knowledge of how this works, I would say that Team Rocket is similar to kind of how the mafia functions, kind of like the 20th century iteration of the mafia. Think the Godfather, right? And often they would be friends with the police and they would pay them, you know, hefty sums of money to make sure to protect particular people or villainize other people who are on the bad side of the mafia. So I actually think the answer is that there is a particular exchange of money and power going on, and that the police and Giovanni are like in cahoots with each other is probably my best answer.
Officer Jenny just got a whole new look.
Yeah, like she might be working with the enemy. I'm not sure.
Officer Jenny, where did you get those that Prada? Okay, next one. Oh my God. Lloyd, who likes Mega Charizard Y, wanted to know, what was Ash's first Pokemon? So the answer is Pikachu in the anime. However, I wanted to clarify this, that Clefairy was actually originally designed and was originally going to be the starter sidekick to Ash. And that originally they wanted Clefairy to be like the mascot for the company. I'm trying to remember. I think Pikachu was picked because it had a sleeker design, if I'm not mistaken.
Fun chunky boy Pikachu has a sleeker design? Because that feels ironic.
Well, but even like Pikachu in the anime still was sleeker than Clefairy.
And Clefairy. And also Clefairy's pink, which might have
that's what comes to my head. I think yellow is a more neutral.
Pink.
Yeah, I think it's more yellow is just a more neutral color that appeals to everybody as opposed to pink being specifically
yeah,
one.
This is my jacket. I'm appealing to everybody.
No comment. Okay, so our last and final question comes from Vic, who likes Mewtwo, who says, who was the last Pokemon made? Steve.
Listen, okay, I want to answer this, but I also know Anirudh pointed out that we had another question that we might have skipped earlier about the value of cards. I don't want to miss that one.
And Anirudh, it's your time to shine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I can actually theoretically answer that question as opposed to what the last Pokemon is, which is kind of like the new one.
Do the last Pokemon first, Ben. Go for it.
Okay, yes, let me do, because this one actually is very fun. So I took this, okay, the last Pokemon created was probably Petrarunt, because it was the last one in the decks. But thinking about actual making of Pokemon, we know that type null was man-made, and that is as recent as Gen 7. So I would say that's probably the most recent, you know, the last Pokemon actually made was type null. But human-made Pokemon have been throughout, you know, the decks. So we know like Magearna was human created, Grimer came about from human pollution, Binette was a possession of a human possessed doll. So actually this whole idea of man-made Pokemon has been something that's been, you know, from across generations, but I would say type null for this one. Okay, economics. We still got to answer that question.
Enaru.
This is unrelated.
The last
I just wanted
Pokemon
to,
ever made does not exist.
I mean, it could. If Pokemon just said, hey, guess what? We're done. Thumbs up. Walks away. Then
they're
technically
a company. They're never going to do that until they don't have sales.
Game Freak just said they're not done. Like, they're like, we can go forever.
Actually,
so.
That's a good point. Today was explicitly a day mentioning the fact that they're not done. So I feel like that's probably very, very true.
To be fair, they did not announce much that they are doing themselves. The only two new projects are games that other companies are making. Which does make me think that they are probably putting all their resources into Gen 10. Which mm-hmm. I am happy to kind of assume that. Based upon
yep.
how companies are run.
Yeah.
We do have one last question. It is from, was that Mitra? Who likes Loudred. How does the Pokemon Company purposely impact the value of different Pokemon cards? Andrew, I'll let you go and then I'll explain my explanation afterwards.
This is a good timing because I introduced a TCG game thing. I'm pretty sure it's a game technically. I just know you open a lot of packs and that's it, which honestly not too shabby. I like the pack opening thing. And then very unrelated to all of this, apparently there's an entire page, at least on Bulbapedia, about artificial Pokemon, both known and unknown, which could be a fascinating zoom through. Though they do kind of align to the same thing that Ben was talking about, the type null, probably the most recent in terms of like timeline, because I think type null is made when like Lily and Gladion are like kids, which is in the time frame of the Pokemon games, even when you set up the timeline. And then most of the others are kind of like, oh, hundreds of years ago, a thing happened with a thing, a Pokemon. That's how most of it works. In regards to Pokemon trading cards, it's interesting. So the Pokemon franchise is different than Yu-Gi-Oh, which is my other big trade. I have not and am scared to get into Magic because I'm worried I will fall into it the same way I have in the past with Yu-Gi-Oh, and I have tried to push away with Pokemon so far. But the Pokemon franchise, so Yu-Gi-Oh does not have a rotating list of this is a specific term that I don't know off the top of my head, but Yu-Gi-Oh, if the card was ever made, if it was made in 2002, if it was made yesterday, the card is valid. Pokemon does not have that. They have their rotating set list effectively of allowable cards, which are typically, I think it's the last year, last 2 years, somewhere in that ballpark. It's almost like a pseudo ban list in and of itself. If the card is not recent, then you can't use it competitively. You can still have it to play around with your friends, just like banned cards in Yu-Gi-Oh and banned cards in Magic, but you've got the set list there. So that actually helps Pokemon, the company, produce Charizard version 1200, because 1199 and previous are no longer acceptable in competitive battle. So if you're a competitive person, it gives them a reason to reproduce it. They, as well, you take the opportunity to, the Pokemon Company, I assume, follows the same thing as Yu-Gi-Oh, where they like short print certain types of good cards to make it more valuable to pull. The fact that there is an entire market for the Pokemon Company means that they can sort of, or for Pokemon cards, means that they can go and sort of not manipulate the odds, but like make it so that the market aligns with what they expect and what they want it to be, which they have the ability to do. All of that just kind of combines to, they've got a few different ways of impacting cards. The thing with the Pokemon Company, the farther away it is from them printing it, in terms of like time, the less control they have over it. So when you see the original sets being sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars, that really has nothing to do with the Pokemon Company. That's just people really wanting this valuable thing. And so Madison, this is a perfect opportunity to hand it over to you.
I mean, does it though, or does it not? So here's the thing though, like, they could always choose to reprint.
They
Or to
could.
re-release.
They could. The issue with that, though, and the same thing happens with Yu-Gi-Oh, is that first edition versus the unlimited version,
No, I
there
know.
is a difference to the collectors.
I have my Yu-Gi-Oh deck on the wall over there.
It's not here. I have way too many of them just hiding
Oh,
under the
dude.
stairs and boxes.
I quit playing when we got into Pendulum because Pendulum was too confusing for me.
I still don't understand it. I'm glad it's
But you
it's,
want to, you want to, you want to do Yu-Gi-Oh? We hang out at the next convention. Let's do it. I have two burn decks. Two
Oh
burn
God.
decks.
Oh boy. But yeah, Madison, do you have another points?
So
I think
my
you
thing
touched.
actually, and this comes from a Planet Money episode because I love economics for anyone who's like, oh, what does Madison enjoy? Scientists,
Money.
my drug.
The monies.
I literally
Guys, did
just
you know
like.
Madison's more of a capitalist than I am?
You shut the hell up. We're going to have to bleep that because I said that. You shut up right now.
I thought you meant bleep capitalist.
That's right. I don't say bad words on this show or any other show. I say controversial things. Yeah. Like
Whereas
capitalism.
I'm
Whoa.
Canadian, so like I was raised to be polite. I'm not Canadian. My family is Canadian. I'm first gen. I was raised to be polite, but the F word was every other. Use your manners, don't you know? Oh, you go you on that, eh? Thanks, that was great. I appreciate that. Anyways, so I know there's a whole Planet Money episode about Magic the Gathering, and I loved it. It was a few years ago, but essentially, Magic, so you gotta remember, Magic came before Pokemon. Magic came on the scene and realized that they could artificially inflate the value of different cards and actually control the value by a few different properties. So one is release schedule, as Andrew just mentioned. By controlling how often they would reprint a card, they could control its rarity, which could then control how many times people would buy the random packs, because we are talking about behavioral reward schedules where you're getting a reward every so often, which anyone who knows behavioral theories, which is what Anaru did, and I hate 100%, have written an entire master thesis about how behavioral theories being inappropriate in the educational setting. Variable schedules, which is essentially the idea that your reward is non-consistent. So there is a difference between Pavlov, we all know Pavlov, Pavlovian conditioning, which is the idea that the bell rings, the dog gets fed. That's a consistent schedule. And so that's an expected schedule where the animal knows to expect the behavior. What behavioral theories show is that inconsistent schedules, which we call variable schedules, are actually stronger than consistent schedules. If you consistently reward the behavior and then take away the stimuli, the reward behavior stops existing. But in a variable schedule, the reward behavior consists. So if you're a company, this is like what gambling does too. If you're a company that then knows that it's such a it's an inconsistent chance of winning, people are going to buy more. And so Magic the Gathering figured this out. And so they could control a couple things. How often something's printed. And then, as in, like, what sets it in. And then within each set, how likely are you to find it? In addition, which Pokemon has also done, there are a few cards that are so rare that there's only, like, you know, a few hundred in existence. And so they are able to control the value on that. And while Anaru may mention, because this is a secondary market, as he said before, Pokemon has no control over the secondary market, they actually kind of can influence the secondary market by ensuring that there is no primary market. So the difference between primary and secondary market is that a primary market is coming directly from the producer, and the secondary market is a resale, if that makes sense. TPCI knows that they can control the secondary market by controlling the primary market, which increases incentive for players to buy into the primary market, hoping that there is no secondary market. It's a whole convoluted like sense of behavioral economics. But essentially that's what it is. It's the combination of reward schedules and it, you know, inconsistent ability to find the thing you want.
Yeah, it's a big snowball effect because as time has gotten on and people have gotten more and more interested in using Pokemon cards as commodities as opposed to trading cards, it's turned it now into a way that it almost turns into introducing FOMO to a sense that like, hey, that last set had some bonkers cards. This next set, it could have the next great thing. You know that you know the old Charizard? That could be a card right here. This random I don't know. I'm trying to think. Revavroom over here. This could be the next, holo Charizard. All you got to do is find it. And,
Well, and
incentivizing people to.
I think that makes me laugh, Andrew, because just as I was making fun of, and I do love my psychologist, and I've been seeing her for several years, and she's amazing. But every now and then she'll say a Freudian thing to me, and I'm like, that's complete trash. And she'll be like, but it's the foundation. And I'm like, great. And the foundation of economics is the idea that people are logical, does not mean it's valuable or worth anything at all. Because people are much more complex than in the foundation. Like, you know, the foundation of medicine was let's cut them and bleed them and put leeches on them and they'll get better. Like, foundation does not mean it has value. So I think that looking at that economical wise, like Andrew's right, like because there is that fear of missing out, which goes into the variable reward schedule, people are more likely to buy regardless. And they know that. They know that. They know what they're doing. Which is why I always tried to make Pokemon decks when I did play TCG. I always tried to make counter meta decks because I was like, I don't want to have to pay for the meta decks.
Thinking two steps ahead, 4D chess.
Well, I remember I went to the Nationals one year and it was right before Metal Energy had a basic energy, so it was special energy, but they had just pre-released the Empoleon deck that had basic energy metal for the first time ever. So I bought three of those decks and tossed them into this. It was, I don't know if Anna, do you remember the Hoenn series? The Hoenn, the Delta Species series?
Yes, I do remember Delta series,
I
yeah.
had the Aerodactyl that was a steel type, and you had to expel steel energies for that and the Salamence. And so it was a milling energy deck with the Aerodactyl, detaching the Salamence, and just. But like that only happened because I got lucky. It was like a 2 week period where it was able to happen.
Excellent.
I still went like I had like four wins and six losses. Should have bought the expensive deck.
Well, y'all, how
So I
was
think that's
that
all of our
for
questions, though,
a
Jillian? That was all of them.
climactic Pokemon Day.
Yeah. Hey,
Perfect
you know
cap.
what? I'm excited for Legends ZA. I think it's gonna be great.
I'm excited for Pokemon Sleep. I have been consistent with that. I'm not gonna lie.
Right? I'm
So
gonna get
at
that
this point,
Raikou. I'm gonna get him.
like, look, if we're introducing
How
legendaries
does
into
Pokemon
this,
Sleep work, by the way? Can someone explain it to me? Because I have no.
it's just a sleep tracker with gamification, if
Yeah.
that.
Gamifying sleep. Oh
It's
boy.
gamifying sleep.
Okay, you know
Honestly, it's
what?
helping. It's helping.
It gamifies it, and it's so fun and cute. Like, I am just plug for Pokemon Sleep right now.
Yeah.
Which we all
Can
should
you
probably
transfer
do
the
soon.
Pokemon to home?
No, the Pokemon are just locked into the sleep app,
No,
so I
it's just a sleep thing. It doesn't have any real Pokemon
There's no
benefits.
value, yes.
I will let you know though, since I started Pokemon Sleep, I've been keeping track. I'm pretty sure I think stats are like I'm sleeping like about 45 minutes, an hour more than I used to. And I think part of that is just me being like, look, I gotta get to bed at this time because if I do, then I can get the rewards because I fell asleep during my alarm time and I've set that on purpose. And so
No, this is real.
I can wake up and then I'll get the bonus points and I can find maybe this
Oh
like
my God.
this
That's
a new.
so, it's so real. You can find shinies too. Like, it's so
Yes.
real.
I'm
You
so
can
used
shiny
to.
hunt sleep. It's beautiful.
I haven't gotten good sleep in months. I'm so used to two things. I'm used to Haley waking me up every night because she's going through a nightmare phase and I'm not sleeping at all. And I love her to death, but I'm like, sweetheart, can you just sleep, please? Mom needs sleep. I love you to death, but mom needs sleep big time.
Girl, I need sleep without the Pokemon, and I'm talking tonight.
But then also,
Tonight.
when Isla and I started dating last September, October, she, because she's a single mom, like I'd only some nights she'd pass out putting her kid to bed. So I'd get like a random text at like 3 in the morning. So now my body like will instantly wake up at like somewhere between 2 and 4. And my first inclination is, do I have a text message?
Tragic.
I'm not
well,
gonna lie.
y'all, are we
right
setting
now,
our sleep timers? Are we? Are
you're
we?
Joking.
Is that...
I have said it. The moment that we're done with this call, I'm like closing. Like,
all
it's,
right.
It's my phone thinks I'm asleep right now and can clearly hear that I'm lying right now.
Set your sleep timers,
oh
folks.
Gosh.
Have a restful Pokemon day, Pokemon night. Any
Happy
last
Pokemon
words?
Day.
Happy Pokemon Day, y'all.
We're probably going to
yes.
release this episode as a two-parter.
So be it.
Okay, I guess I have editing to do tonight really quick.
Well, that's all from Pika Science, signing off.